Welcome to a podcast of The Power of Writing, presented by Brittany Rosen. This podcast was recorded at the 2013 TA Conference in Reno, Nevada.
Thank you so much for being here at The Power of Writing. Yes, good, I said it correctly. The Power of Writing. And I'm actually was supposed to present this presentation with Patricia Goodson, and she's actually the one that came up with this writing model that I'm about to talk about, but unfortunately she couldn't be here. But this is a model, the Power Writing Model, as we like to call it. And Power stands for the promotion of promoting outstanding writing for excellence in research. And basically, this is a writing model to help alleviate stress during writing, and to actually really help you be productive, and actually also to help with the quality of your writing. And so it's a set of principles and practices for promoting writing productivity and quality writing. And for this presentation, I want to discuss the theory behind Power. I want to discuss the research behind Power, and then after this presentation, you will be able to utilize the Power principles to increase your writing productivity. The theory behind Power is really comes from Peter Elbow's writing process. And what Peter Elbow talks about in Writing with Power, it's actually a book, so I couldn't use that title, Writing with Power, because Peter Elbow already used it. But Peter Elbow talks about having control over the writing process, knowing yourself as a writer and having control over yourself and over your writing process and not feeling like you're stuck and helpless. And in order to have control over the writing process, really there's a need for bad writing. And what I mean by that is, does anybody in here do photography, know about photography? Yes, okay, good. So for photographers, you know that you have to take 100 pictures to get one good picture, correct? Yeah, you have to take lots of pictures. So you'll see those pictures in National Geographic. And you're like, oh, it's so pretty. Like, all these people take really pretty pictures. Well, they took 100 to 200 pictures just to get that one shot. Well, the same with writing. You have to write 100 and 200 words just to get one good idea. And so there's this need to write badly first and then to actually share that bad writing in early drafts, and then also in the later drafts. And as you become comfortable with this, the writing process actually becomes more enjoyable. And so once you become comfortable with writing and putting out initially messy drafts, you look forward to actually sharing those messy drafts with your readers and then getting that feedback. And then you actually are excited to take that feedback and incorporate that into your writing to make your writing even better. And that's really when the writing process starts to become enjoyable. A little bit of the research behind the Power Writing Model comes from psychology and neuroscience. So psychology, there's been a lot of research looking at what creates elite performers. Is it genes, genetics, or is it practice, a behavior? And a lot of psychologists have found that it's actually practice. It's deliberate practice. And with this deliberate practice, it creates these elite performers. And the difference between non-elite performers and elite performers is this actual practice. So let's say two people want to learn golf, and you have your non-elite performer and you have your elite performer. And what happens is this non-elite performer practices golf until they get to a satisfactory level. This elite performer gets to the satisfactory level but continues working on their skills and abilities. And then you have people like Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson who are the elite performers, and it's because they've continued to work on their skills and practice, or skills and keep in the deliberate practice. Additionally, neuroscience has also looked at what causes elite performers, and similar to psychology, it's deliberate practice or what they call deep practice. But if you have heard of the Talent Code by Daniel Coyle, I believe is that's how you pronounce his last name. He actually says or found that it's not necessarily the practice itself that causes elite performers, but it's what happens in the brain that causes the elite performers. So what happens in the brain is you have the synapses in the neurons, but then you also have this substance called myelin, which is the insulating substance around the nerves that go to the brain. And when you practice a certain behavior, what happens is there's this rapid firing. Let me read this because I want to make sure I say this correctly. Practice allows us to fire specific circuits in our brains repeatedly, and it develops more myelin. In turn, more myelin leads to faster, more optimal firing of circuits, thereby developing skills. So such as elite athletes or professional athletes, they have practiced this skill over and over. So for instance, Nolan Ryan throwing a fastball at 101 miles an hour, he has practiced this over and over, and he has super duper nerves and myelin. Additionally, an example of this deep practice is if you look at the Bronte sisters, Emily, Charlotte, and Anne, who are all considered extremely well writers and just naturally gifted. But really, when you look back at their history and you look back into what they were doing as children, they had a lot of practice. And they did live in a very literary, nurturing environment. But again, it was that practice. And if you read some of their earlier stories, they're actually very bad stories. So again, that goes back to Peter Elbow's need to write badly in order to write well. So you might be thinking to yourself, well, that's great and wonderful that all this information tells me about deep practice, but what does that mean for me as an academic writer, and how do I include this information in my academic writing? Well, we need to commit to practicing our academic writing, and that includes obtaining feedback, and I'll explain why in a minute. And committing to practice will actually help with our writing, and our productivity will improve. You might be saying, okay, well, that's great, but how do I practice writing other than just writing? Well, this is what the power model helps with. It helps, or it will provide you with practices and behaviors that you can use to engage in these exercises, and you can make mistakes, and then you can correct those mistakes to, again, help your myelin improve your skills. And so this deliberate practice exercise will help to be specific dimensions of writing and obtaining feedback. And really the term deliberate practice refers to practice undertaken with a specific goal in mind to improve. And the learner will mindfully engage in practice designed by an instructor, coach, mentor, tutor who provides the corrective feedback as encouragement to excel. And so that's why it's so important to obtain that feedback. So let's talk about some of these principles and practices that I keep bringing up for the power model. And the first one is you have to schedule your writing time. This is the most important and biggest practice that you can do to improve your writing productivity is schedule your writing time. Scheduling time to write establishes all of your other writing exercises that I'm going to talk about. It is the key to success and productivity, and a lot of research on faculty members who are productive has shown that the number one theme or the most common theme that comes about is these faculty members who are extremely productive schedule their writing time. Okay, they find time when there is none. They create that time for their writing. And you too must create writing time in order to be productive. And it's highly recommended that you write at the same time every single day. So what you can do is pull out your green sheet. And you can tell I'm in education because you have multiple colors of handouts. And so it's so easy to be like, pull your green sheet out. And this is a Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and I want you to take a minute, and I want you to think about, when are you most productive during the day? Are you most productive in the morning, very early, before 8 a.m.? You can put 7 or 6 a.m. in your little schedule, if that's when you're most productive. Or are you productive later in the afternoon at 3 or 4 or 5 o'clock? And I want you to go ahead and schedule in that time for writing all the way across through the rest of the week. I know, I'm sorry. I actually created this off of my own schedule, so that's why it only goes till 8 o'clock. So once 8 o'clock is, I'm done. Yeah, you can add lines. You can, if you want to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you can add that line in there as well. I know some people who do that. All right, so now that you've scheduled a time, the same time every single day, you have just taken the first step in scheduling your writing time. Yay! But now I want you to take 3 minutes. So I have three questions up here, so 1 minute per question. And I want you to think about, and you write, and you can write down on your green sheet, what does it take to get me to write, to begin and or continue to write? What keeps me away from writing? And how have I been treating my most important academic tool? All right, so let's take a look at what does it take to get me to write, to begin and or continue? Would anybody like to share what they wrote for that item? Deadlines?
A little bit of inspiration. So it might be a turn of phrase, an idea, or a different article. Just the first piece of something to get excited about.
Something to get excited about. Inspiration. Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
Back at the first edition, second edition, preparatory work.
Preparatory work.
Yeah. Having the writing console surrounded with the broadsheets, the outlines, the work, and then getting to write.
Okay, so being prepared and getting ready to write. Okay, good. And what keeps me away from my writing?
Just about everything.
Anything and everything. What I read somewhere, somebody wrote something about if I want to clean, or like cleaning is more fun than writing. Like even cleaning your own house is more fun than writing. Polishing the silver. Yes. Not being in a good location. Not getting enough sleep.
See yourself coming down the road, and that's an interesting dialogue. Whereas at the beginning, you don't know those, and so the garage is really clean, and the things are tidied up, and the laundry's done. But you learn those, and it becomes part of the game.
So procrastination mechanisms.
Learning
your procrastination mechanisms.
Well, it's interesting, the answer to the first one and the second one is exactly the same, schedules and deadlines. One keeps me going for it. The second one, I back off. It's probably anxiety.
Good. Okay. Well, I'm glad that, so you noticed that that having a schedule helps you, and then, but also having a schedule freezes.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I think that's good that you've recognized that though. That's the first step. Oh, we'll do one more, and then we'll go to the third question.
I'm going to try to fly a microphone around. I didn't know you were going to go off the phone. Here, is it?
Is it turned on?
Yes, it is.
Well, it can be. It can be a torturous process for me. It really takes a lot of procrastination, chores, etc. But once I'm in the zone, it's like a high, and I sometimes don't know when to stop. So I will sometimes go all night because I wouldn't get any rest. It's not.
I need
a schedule. I think I need a schedule.
Yes.
Just one key point to what she said about the insecurity, or the you got to accept insecurity as the co-pilot sitting next to you. That is a given. It's always there. It's a tool. It's a energy source. That's the co-pilot.
Definitely. And we're gonna talk about how to curb the insecurity, or trying to write it perfect the first time. So. And the third, how have I been treating my most important academic tool? But really quick, before we get to that, who immediately thought that writing was your most important academic tool? Who made that connection? We got 1, 2, 3, 4. We've been in power. 3 people. Okay, good. How many of you thought something else was an important academic tool? What did you think was the most important academic tool?
Increased scholarly reading.
Okay. So a lot of people, when asked what their most important academic tool is, they'll say research skills, teaching methods, or knowing how to teach. But hardly anybody ever says writing. And it's so important that we recognize ourselves as writers, especially in academia, because that's what we do. We write for publication. We write for grants. I still write my lessons plans down. I think that that's extremely important, especially when I want to go back and change something. We are constantly writing. We are writers. Whether you think we are or not, we are. We write for a living. And so it's extremely important to note that writing is your most important academic tool. So tell me, how have you been treating that tool?
About a week ago, I had something pop into my head that describes perfectly, and I call it anorexia, booklemia. That's how I call it. Binging and purging, that's what I've been doing.
Binging and purging, okay. Anybody else want to talk about how they treat their most important academic tool? You've described it already as its torturous process.
I should have a more regulated or regular method, but I don't.
So it's a torture tool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm successful. I do well, but it is causing me also a lot of
stress.
Stress. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Well, this is. No, no, you don't. No stress. I'm all about low stress, Lots of rest, low stress.
Writing is like writing is the medium. It's the conduit through which the reading and the passes. It's the ambiance. It's the given. Yeah.
Okay, good. So I want you to keep these ideas in mind, okay, because the next principle, we're going to talk about them just a little bit and how to kind of adjust for these. So now that you've scheduled your writing time, you want to increase your writing time. And what you might want to do is for those people who don't write a lot, or you binge and purge and you don't write for a long time, and then you'll write for 5 hours and then for 3 months you won't write at all. What you can do is you can schedule 15 minutes every day. And for people who are actually used to writing on a regular basis, you can schedule 30 minutes every day. But the point of this is you want to actually add 1 minute of writing time to your regular writing session, one session at a time. So for instance, let's say on Monday you get back and you're like, the power of writing was awesome and I love those principles and I'm going to implement every single one of them. So the first thing I'm doing is schedule my time, so now I'm going to write 15 minutes. Well, Tuesday you would add 15 minutes plus one. So on Tuesday you would write 16 minutes. Wednesday you would take 15 minutes plus two. So Wednesday you'd write 17 minutes, 18 minutes on Friday, 18 minutes on Thursday, 19 minutes on Friday. And you continually do this until you get to about 45 minutes to an hour. Dr. Goodson, who came up with this, the power model, she likes to do no more than 45 minutes in a writing session. I like an hour because 45 minutes is nice and round, but I think an hour is more round because it goes all the way around the clock. And so I really encourage you to buy a timer for this. And during this time, what you want to do is you want to do nothing else but write. How many of you get distracted by email? How many of you check your email while writing? Yes, it's okay. I do it too. Facebook, anyone? Yeah, I totally check Facebook. I'm like, no, stop. During this time, you don't check your email. You don't check Facebook. You don't check your text messages. And there's ways to help yourself not check your email. So turn off your email. Turn off your internet. I know a lot of us have wireless internet, but I actually still have the internet that hooks up to my computer. So I will unplug my internet so that I'm not distracted. And if you're doing this for 15 minutes, I mean, you got to stay focused for those 15 minutes. If you're only doing this for 30 minutes, you got to stay focused for those 30 minutes. And so when you get back on Monday and you're implementing these strategies, the first writing session that you can do is you can actually look at the three questions that I've asked you and come up with strategies to make your writing better. So when I asked you, what keeps me away from my writing? And you said, you know, it's a torturous tool and you binge and purge. Well, one of the strategies is to create a schedule. And so that's what I encourage you to do on Monday when you start implementing these strategies. So go back and take a look at those questions. The next step is you want to keep and share a writing log. And you might be saying to me, well, Brittany, doesn't that seem like more work? I already have to write for 15 minutes, 30 minutes. Now I got to keep this writing log. And I'm all about cutting down work, trust me. But keeping a writing log does three things. It helps you keep track of your writing, and it keeps you accountable to yourself. So when I say, oh, I wrote an hour today, I can actually see I wrote an hour because I kept that in my writing log. It also is positive reinforcement. Because when I get to Friday and I'm like, you know, I want it, on Monday I decided I wanted to have 15 hours of writing. And I'm, when I get to Friday and I see I'm at 14 hours already, I'm like, yes, I only have to write 1 hour today. Because I will have hit my goal for the writing hours for the week. It also helps you keeps you accountable to other people, such as your students and your colleagues. And so there's also been research showing that keeping a writing log makes you 4 times more productive than a person who does not keep the writing log. And the same research showed that if you share your writing log, you are 9 times more productive than people who don't keep a writing log. Or if you share your writing log, you're 9 times more productive than people who did not share a writing log. No? Than people who didn't keep one at all. Sorry. Mix that up. But sharing your writing log makes you even more productive. That's the main point. So now you might be saying to me, well, Brittany, that's great, but I don't know how to keep it right. Like, what do I need to keep in that? I don't understand. What does one look like? Well, oh, no, where did my color sheets go? Oh. If you pull up your Coral handout and you look at the Excel sheet side, this is an example of my writing log. And it's important that you take or write down the date. You can see here I have what I worked on, so a lot of dissertation chapter 4, and 5. Okay, I was obviously working on my dissertation a lot. But I also included the time that I started, like the actual time, so 8 a.m. or 9:07 a.m. And then I stopped writing at 9:27. And then I recorded how many minutes I wrote that within that session. And then I wrote next to it what I actually accomplished. And those are kind of the things that you should be keeping track of. Now, some people like to keep track of how many pages they wrote or how many words they wrote, but this can be a little bit more challenging when you're starting to edit your paper because you are starting to delete things, and I don't know how you keep track of how many words you deleted or how many pages you deleted. So I like to keep track of minutes. And then on an Excel sheet, you can very easily add up the minutes and then know at the end of the week how many hours you've written. And then at the end of the month, you can see your total hours as well. And then I actually have been doing this for over a year. And you can see that really dark purple line right in the middle. That was actually how many hours I wrote throughout the whole year, and it was close to 500 hours total, and so I was averaging about 40 hours a month. So I was pretty excited. So that's you can, if you're old school, old fashioned, and you want to keep it in a journal and write it down, that is fine. You can do it that way. I like to do it on Excel because it calculates it for me. So the next thing, or the next principle and practice within this power model is you want to document your writing projects in what I like to call a writing journal. And you document pretty much every decision that you make within this writing project. And it's a tool to just kind of help you document what's going on in your writing projects. And all writing projects have their own journal. So for dissertation chapter one, it had its own writing journal. Dissertation chapter two had its own writing journal. And in here I included the date, the writing session goals, or what I was going to accomplish that day. And then I completed what tasks I completed, and then what I wanted to work on next. So if you want to look at your same Coral handout, but on the other side, I have an example of a journal, my writing journal for dissertation chapter 3. And you can see for March 1st, 2003, I have today, so that's what I want to accomplish today. Those are my goals. So keep working on introduction based on the literature that I have read. Did is what I accomplished, and I worked through one sentence. It's a very short writing session. And tomorrow, I want to keep working through the intro. And basically, you can be as detailed or not as detailed as you want. I didn't need to be very detailed on March 1st, but as I continued through March 12th and March 13th, I started to become more and more detailed, especially in my tomorrow. And tomorrow is what you need to do next. And tomorrow might not necessarily mean tomorrow. It might mean the next time you work on it. And this is extremely helpful because you're not stuck on where did I stop last? Where do I need to pick up on? This tool right here has helped me so much. And it helps with writer's block as well because you're not stuck. Again, you know exactly where you're picking up off. You know exactly where you are picking up from. And you're able to move immediately and you're not wasting time. This is an amazing tool, and I love using a writing journal. When I first heard of it, I was like, what? That's really weird. How do you do that? I don't understand. But I highly recommend this in order to help you not waste time. So you've scheduled your writing time. You're increasing your time. You're keeping a writing log of every time you write, and you have your writing journal pulled up, and you're ready to go. So the next step you want to do is you want to do a warm-up writing. And a warm-up writing before each writing session, and this can be 5 to 10 minutes. I usually like to keep it about 5 minutes. Unless I'm reading, then I usually do 10 minutes because I don't read fast. But in warming up, you can do a couple of exercises. And one is dumping, copying, a new vocabulary word, or reading. And I'm going to talk about each one of these. So in dumping, what you want to do is you just dump all of your thoughts onto a paper if you're handwriting, or you can do it on the computer. But the key here is you do not stop. You don't go back. You don't pay attention to if you are mistyping a word, misspelling a word. If you don't have any thoughts, then you just start writing, I don't know what I'm thinking. You do not stop. And that is the whole concept of dumping. And you can do that. You can write about whatever you want. If you just had a fight with your partner, your spouse, your kids, you can dump about that and, you know, get that all out before you start your writing session. Or if you're like, you know what, I have a really good idea for a new research project, you can dump about that and get that out as well. It can be whatever you want it to be about. Copying, and I'm not suggesting that you copy somebody's work and pass it on as your own. This is not what this is about. Copying is actually taking somebody else's writing that you want to emulate or imitate. I can't talk today. And you slowly copy their work, one word at a time, one sentence at a time, for about 10 minutes. And what this does is it actually exposes you to somebody else's writing, but you're really paying more attention to their sentence structure, the words that they're using, the order of how they are using these words. And you're not memorizing anything. You're not memorizing the work. You're just copying. And you do this for about 5 to 10 minutes. A new vocabulary word. You can get a new vocabulary word or find a new vocabulary word every day, and you look at the word, you look up the origin of the word, what the word means, and then you'll write 3 to 4 sentences using this word that you might write in a journal or in a research grant that you're trying to do. And this can really help you increase your vocabulary. And then one of my favorite writing warm-ups is to actually read about writing. And you might say to me, well, how do I read about writing? What do I know is a good book to read about writing? And it's really any book that motivates you to write. Any book that you are reading and you're just like, man, I can't wait to try this new exercise out. Or, ooh, I just really liked this part of the book and it talked about the struggles and the joys of writing. I encourage you to read that. And so I've read, or I'm actually reading right now, Bird by Bird. I also encourage you to read How to Write a Lot, Revising Business Prose, and then, of course, Dr. Goodson's Becoming an Academic Writer, which is goes into more detail about the power model than what I'm going to. And I have the book up here, and we can talk about it more after the presentation. So what I would like for you to do is I would like you to take your blue handout. Sure.
So you're saying here warm up for 5 to 10 minutes, but your session is 15 minutes long. So does that mean five?
Right. So if your session is 15 minutes long, we do probably 5 minutes at the most. I mean, you could even make it 3. Right. But if you're, let's say you're doing a 60-minute session, you can warm up for 10 minutes. Yeah. So, yeah, just kind of adjust it according to how long your writing session is going. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. So I would like you to go ahead, and I would like you to pick if you want to do dumping, if you would like to do copying. You can open up, and I actually have a little paragraph here from Dr. Goodson's book that you can copy. And I also have, I got a new vocabulary word. I don't know if any of y'all have heard of visual thesaurus, but you can get a new word every day for about $20. They'll send you a new word in your email, and you can use that. But they sent me a new word, and it was impuissance, and I put the definition here, and you can write 3 to 4 sentences. So I'm going to set the timer for 5 minutes, and I would like you to practice one of these warm-up exercises. All right, ready? Begin. All right, your time is up. And that is just an example of what you can do for a warm-up. How many did dumping? I feel like a lot of people did dumping, yeah. How many did copying? And then how many did a new vocabulary word? Oh, did you come up with any good sentences?
Yes, I actually analyzed my
powerlessness.
You analyzed your... My own powerlessness.
I did a little conflict management with myself there.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
You know, I realized that the powerlessness, I mean, it's so fear-based. So, in fact, I took the word and used it around my own work. So, thank you.
Yes, of course. And we're actually going to talk about the next strategy is actually how to help with that fear and to help with the writer's block. So, we want to... write quickly and edit slowly, which that's the next PowerPoint slide. And those phrases go together. Write quickly, edit slowly. We're going to talk about writing quickly first. And so it's extremely important that we separate writing or generating from editing, because generating, these are two distinct tasks, and generating is a creative takes a creative component from your mind, while editing is an analytic and repetitive task. So when you try to do these two tasks at the same time, they're very conflicting because you're trying to be creative, but you're trying to be analytical as well. And so we really need to make sure that we break those apart and do them separately. This will also really help with writer's block. And part of writer's block is trying to create that perfect first sentence or that perfect paragraph, right? You sit in front of your computer and you're like, I don't know. Well, maybe it'll sound good if I write it. Like, no, I don't like that. And then maybe, okay, I'll type that out. No, I don't like that. And you delete it. And this is what's called the dangerous method by Peter Elbow, and that's trying to write it right the first time. And so what we do is we dump. I see that a lot of us did dumping, so we're not going to do that exercise. But that's what you would do. So you would get ready for your writing session, and you would, let's say, be focused on a lit review. And you're starting it, and you would just dump for 5 to 10 minutes anything and everything that you're thinking about that lit review. And you're not going to pay attention to your grammar, your sentence structure. You're not going to pay attention to even your paragraph. Okay? And you would just dump everything out quickly. And you would probably do that for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes if you're really good at generating. And then you're going to edit slowly. And you're going to go back through your dumping, and you're going to look for good ideas that you want to keep. Then you're going to start looking to place all these similar ideas together. Then you would begin organizing your text. And, of course, as we know with writing, you might start editing, but then you might need to generate a little bit more in order to create those transition sentences or to connect two pieces together. And that's okay, because this is an iterative process. You're going to go back and forth, but you just need to make sure that you're keeping them separate. So when you're trying to write that transition piece, don't sit there and think about it in your head. Just generate it. Write it out. Then you can go back and edit it. So really, this is about accepting and organizing your messy drafts. Like I talked about in the beginning, the need for good writing starts with writing badly. And we talked about the Bronte sisters and how they had poor writing when they first started, and with practice they got a lot better. So first you need to accept your messy drafts. And as we talked about, within your messy draft, you're going to find ideas to keep. So let's say you dumped for about 10 minutes, and let's say that gets you about 500 words, so that would be 2 pages. So first, you would start with 1 page, and you're just going to go through and you're going to read your ideas, and you're going to say, oh, okay, I really like this. And you're going to highlight your idea that you want to keep. You're going to open up a new Word document, and you're going to drag this new idea over that's highlighted over into this new Word document. And then you're going to keep reading, and you're going to look for any new ideas that you want to keep, but you're also going to look for ideas that are similar to the idea that you just highlighted. And you're going to just go through this whole process, go through 1 page at a time, and you're just going to lump similar ideas together. And this is really going to help you organize your text. And this is kind of more of a practice. And so as you continue to practice this and use this in your writing, you're actually going to get better at organizing. I know at first it might seem a little scary, but the more you actually do this, the better that you will get at organizing. So let's kind of look at one together. And if you would like to pick up your other white sheet that does not have the PowerPoint on it, this is actually a messy draft that I had. I was in Dr. Goodson's class, and we were to do a book review, and I read Predictably Irrational, which is actually a really great book. I encourage you to read it. And I was starting to write this book review, and I needed to dump. I needed to get going and get started, so I dumped. And this is what came out. As you can see, I did not care about spelling, grammar, or even paragraph form. I mean, it's one paragraph. So I kind of want to show you what it's like to what I was just talking about and how to organize the messy drafts. And so, I also want to let y'all know that I am a human sexuality educator, so I talk about sexuality in here. So I just want to let y'all know that. I don't want anyone to be surprised. So let's begin. So Fart, His is a great book.
This looks a lot like my students' final papers.
Oh, that's No, that's so sad. I clean it up. I didn't turn this in. So Fart, his book is great. Okay, obviously I didn't go back and correct that. I just wrote that out. It's really been blowing my mind away with some of the way people behave and how they are predicted irrational. I like in his chapter about free was very interesting and really applied to health education and the incentives we can use, also approach of social and market. We could be applying these type of information to our health education studies. So let's say I was like, well, this looks really good. I like this about the free apply to health education. So I'm going to highlight that. And then I would just bring up another Word document here. And I would post, oh, what are you doing? I didn't want that. I'm not asked for a clock. Okay. I'm going to cut and paste. And then we continue reading. And the incentives that we can use also approach of social and market. So I might say, oh, okay, I like social approach of social and market. Oh, so I'm going to cut that because I think it goes with this idea. However, I do have to disagree with him on the making of every type of health education or healthcare, colonoscopy, mammograms, free, because I know I've heard somewhere that people do better and take care of themselves even when they pay a dollar. And I need to find this research, maybe something communicatory, participatory action research with Dr. McIver. So that to me is a new idea, and I might highlight half of it. And then bring this over. And that's how you would kind of begin to organize your text.
Is there a reason why you cut rather than copying?
I like to cut rather than copying just because it lets me know where, like, I like to shorten my text. I like it to get smaller. So I know that I'm actually moving along. But if you would rather just copy than cut, you can do that. That's fine. I just like to see my text get shorter because I feel like I'm like, oh, see how much I'm leaving behind and then see how much I'm actually taking with me. Yeah, and that's true too. So I might dump one day and then that's my session for then. And then the next day I might come back to that. And what I do is every document I have, I save the date of. So it's a new version every date that I work on it. Yes?
So instead of working with two documents and going back and forth, what I usually do is I take the stuff that I don't like and I move it down to the bottom of the page so that I'm taking away and leaving what's good, but I'm not getting rid of it in case I change my mind later.
Yeah, and I definitely don't want you to, when I say get rid of, it's you're not deleting it. You're keeping it in the trash file. But you could do it that way as well, putting it at the bottom of the document. You never want to throw any of your thoughts away, even though you might think at this point it might not be a good idea or one you want to keep. Later it could. And I know I've heard, I actually have a trash document for every project that I work on as well. And there's been times where that trash document has saved me. So, yes.
Some of this seems to be a decision about voice. Some of this seems to be a decision about voice. And these are things that even on the dump, it's good to have voice in mind so that at least the voice is present in the dump. For instance, it says, it has really been blowing my mind away.
Yeah.
Instead of it blows my mind. So that that your dump at least has some style parameters mm-hmm. that are controlling it. Otherwise, that allows a bad habit to persist.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And I really encourage you when you're dumping to just, I write how I talk when I'm dumping. I mean, I just comes out the way I would be talking. So I think that that's really important. And it really helps you keep your voice when you're starting to organize the text.
Yeah, I'm saying some parameters need to be set need to be set ahead of time.
Oh, so you think that it should not have a voice?
I think the first draft, it should have a voice. The first draft should be throw up. I call it vomiting.
Okay, yes, you call it different things.
The idea of persisting with inactive voice, which is a common flaw in writing, I think that's good to have that so that at least there's a level of quality to the dump.
Oh, yeah.
No, you would want to be at a point.
You guys are thinking.
You would want to be at a point where it was the very nature of the thing that you speak in active voice.
Yeah. So, and when I'm pulling things out, I don't change the voice until I actually go back and I'm reading through and I'm trying to actually organize all those like ideas together. That's when I start polishing and making. Writing in an active voice, not when I'm pulling things out. Because you might, after you're dumping, you might find that you have the same idea written three different ways, but it's the same idea three times. And so you don't want to change anything until you've started pulling all of your ideas together and making sure you have all your like ideas.
I'm just going to let you know that we're about 5 minutes
off. Yes.
The other quick point is when you say you write like you speak, the reason it doesn't work to record a lecture and type it up, and there's chapter one, is that words need to carry the eyebrow energy, hand gestures, and everything you do when you're talking to somebody like I am right now. That has to be built into the words because there are no eyebrows, there are no hand gestures, there are nothing. So the idea of even on the dump, of having a level of expression that encompasses that. But anyway.
Thank you. Another principle is we want to write to clarify our thinking. And a lot of times we don't really think of writing as a tool to learn. So I would highly encourage you to choose an unfamiliar topic, something that you might have always wanted to learn about. So if you've always wanted to learn about crochet or bowling, or if you have a research topic that you're just starting on or a literature review that you've been dreading, what I want you to do is I would encourage you to take this topic and write about it for 10 to 15 minutes every day. And first you would just start writing about what the topic seems to be about, how you feel about this topic, what do you want to know, what do you know about this topic, and what might you want to learn. And then you would actually take this 10, 15 minutes after you've wrote all your feelings down about it. You'd go and you would read and do research. But as you're reading and you're doing research, write about what you're reading. Write about your interaction with the text. Write about your new discoveries. And you will soon learn that when you're writing very easily about it is when you actually understand it. And lastly, you want to find writing support. And this is extremely important in getting feedback because you need that feedback in order to correct your mistakes. And correcting your mistakes actually makes you a better writer. So the best way to get writing support is to have a writing group or a writing circle. And I'm not going to go into detail about that because Jennifer Travis is doing a roundtable tomorrow on supportive writing groups and creating them. But they're extremely important because you can get regular feedback, but you can also provide regular feedback. And sometimes providing feedback is a lot better than actually getting feedback because you start to identify other people's mistakes. They're writing mistakes, and then you think to yourself, oh, I'm doing the same thing, and you didn't even realize that you were doing that, and I know this firsthand experience because I have done that. I'm reading somebody else's paper, and I'm like, oh, I do that. Oh, no. Oh, and I've gone back and had to change it because I saw it in somebody else's paper. And lastly, I think it's really good to schedule reading appointments. So if you have somebody who you think is a phenomenal writer and you really want them to look at your stuff, schedule an appointment with them because if you try to send it to them, they won't read it. And you can also say, you know, Dr. Goodson, I would really like for you to read my chapter 2 dissertation and I would be willing to read something of yours. And you would swap with them. And a lot of people are extremely willing to do that. If you're willing to read their paper and give them feedback, then they'll be willing to do that with you as well. So how to wrap up of the power model, which is you have a copy of this, and any questions?
appreciate these ideas. The place I'm stuck in my writing is I follow the Peter Elbow writing freely, and I end up with really wordy drafts, and I have a lot of trouble getting from that to the edited version, because I write in a style that sort of flows from idea to idea. It's not discrete sentences so much, so I can't just pick out a good sentence and leave the rest. So I don't if anybody has any thoughts on that stage.
Yeah, so really what Dr. Goodson talks about in this book, and again, this is all based on power, what you need to do is, or I think what would be very helpful is to identify one key sentence, and then you write a sentence for that paragraph, and if, let's say, you write three sentences for that paragraph, and you have a key sentence idea, so you have four sentences, the rest of those three sentences must connect to that key sentence, and they cannot go off on a new idea. Because what you'll find, or what I find in my writing, is sometimes, like, you know, I'll have my key sentence, and then two sentences are connected to the key sentence, and they're very tight, and they're really good. And then I have that third sentence that it's connected to the key sentence, but it starts a new idea. And then I realize, this is a new idea. This needs to be a new paragraph. This needs to be a new key sentence. And I need to come up with more information to build this new idea up. And she talks about that strategy in here.
I'm going to have to ask that. Maybe you can ask Brittany questions after the session because we have the workshop.
Yes, definitely.
I don't know if this is on. Is it on? Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for coming.
This has been an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.